Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at the Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. If you want to respond to anything we are talking about, please do so on the text line. Joining us now on the line, very pleased to bring on my next guest. He represents the 6th Congressional District here in Sweet Home, Alabama. Congressman Gary Palmer on with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us, as always. We do appreciate it. Well, let's kick it off here. Europe right now, kind of an interesting place. I don't know what to make of the Johnson resignation, but you do wonder, Ukraine, it looks like Russia is starting to make headway there in Ukraine. The Europe seems to be kind of a precarious situation right now, and I'm not sure how this fits in that whole weird kind of puzzle, but I'm curious to hear your perspective.
Well, I think Russia has changed its strategy. Instead of trying to fight a multi-front war in Ukraine, they've concentrated in the Donbas region, but they have taken enormous casualties. So they're in a process right now of pulling back a little bit and rebuilding their units, which has opened up some opportunities for Ukraine, but I don't think that we're going to see a resolution to this anytime soon. I keep praying that there will be, but Putin can't afford to lose face by withdrawing, and I don't see Ukraine giving up. My concern is we keep providing help to Ukraine on a piecemeal basis, where I think if we're going to help them, we ought to get in there. And I don't mean send our troops in, but we give them the resources they need instead of just doling it out a little here and a little there.
Yeah, the piecemeal approach, drip, drip, drip. Maybe it's working. It's hard to tell, but at some point we got to say, when is enough enough?
Well, like I say, if we're going to help, then give them what they need. And one reason is that, I mean, we're already involved. Okay. So just give them what they need. And I think it will reduce casualties on the Ukrainian side. It will help their morale. And it might actually help bring this to a negotiated end a lot quicker. But by just, doling it out a little bit here and a little bit there, it's just going to make this worse for everybody over there, that is.
Well, and, how much of this becomes just white noise after a while, that we just become to accept that Russia's there and not going anywhere, and it becomes less of an urgency for not just us here in the United States, but you wonder the rest of the world, they just shrug it off almost, and nothing changes. So we're hitting kind of a point of we don't want to head in that direction, but it could happen.
Well, this is less about Russia than it is about how this impacts their calculations, because I think it's important that Ukraine not fall to Russia. It's also important that NATO and the U.S. show more resolve, because I think if China watches this and sees weakness on our part, as they saw in Afghanistan, and they decide to go ahead and take Taiwan, that's going to have enormous consequences for us, and not just militarily, but economically, because 70% of the microchips, that semiconductors that we use come from Taiwan, and 90% of the advanced ones. the consequences of Taiwan falling to China would be enormously negative for the U.S. So there's more to the Ukrainian situation than maybe the average Joe understands.
Well, let's talk a little bit about China these days. We're 2 years of some change into the COVID, and I'm curious to hear what do you think? Will we ever get to a place where we get to hold those guys accountable for this? There was a lot of talk early on. And, you know, you talk about this as well as anybody, Mao's 100-year plan and how they're turning the corner here. What do you anticipate there in the future? What do you think it looks like post potential Republican takeover of Congress? Do we get any movement there?
Well, if I have anything to do with it, we will. I'm very concerned about China's influence in Latin America, Central and South America. And again, I hope the people who listen to you understand that we cannot be isolationists. We're literally being surrounded by China. And we get the majority back. There's going to be an effort on my part and the part of others to establish better relationships with Central and South American countries. We're way, way behind where we need to be, Jeff. You just had a Marxist elected president of Colombia, and Colombia was one of our strongest allies. If you look at who are the principal trading partners for South American nations right now, all but two, the principal trading partners, China. And we're facing another election in Brazil with Bolsonaro, who if he loses, then we will lose one of the biggest economies in the Western Hemisphere to China's influence. Obviously, with them still having elections, this could be temporary, but even in the short term, there are consequences for these things. And there are other, the Central American countries are getting tremendous pressure from China. So, like I say, there's a lot more at stake here than the average person understands. And if we can establish a Western Hemisphere presence that's based on a mutual opportunity for prosperity and security, we can bring our supply chain much closer to the United States. We may not be able to bring it all within our borders, but we can bring it within the neighborhood, as I like to say when talking about South and Central America. It just makes so much more sense and will add to our national security.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the China expanding its sphere of influence, that does seem to be a trend, not just in the Western Hemisphere, but around the world. Let's talk about this inflation, the economy, and things don't seem to be improving. Gas prices down a little bit, but that may have more to do with demand and summer travel or whatever, but what do you think of this? You know, these kind of token gestures from the Biden administration with calling for gas tax holidays and releasing from the Strategic Oil Reserve, Petroleum Reserve. It doesn't seem to be doing the intended what their intended outcome is. It's just it gets to energy production and figuring that out, right?
Well, I think that the gas prices and we're going to see it in household utility costs as well. And you're going to see it on the grocery shelves if you can find the product you're looking for, because we're going to have some food shortages coming up. This is all intentional. You've got people, who even Jeff Bezos, who founded Amazon and now owns the Washington Post, has called out the Biden administration policies as basically what they are. They're stupid. But I think this is really intentional to try to undermine our economy, and particularly fossil fuel, and force us into more dependency, but also into widespread use of renewables, which, frankly, are not going to work. Our power grid is not designed for renewables. You cannot get the consistent base load that you have to for power generation through our power grid with renewables. These people really, they want you paying $4, $5, $6 a gallon for gas because they see this as a way to shut down the fossil fuel industry. I think when we get it, the majority back, while Biden will still be president and he will veto everything that would pass, we've got to put enormous pressure on the administration to reverse some of these policies, and particularly in terms of access to the oil and natural gas that we have here, that if we did that, as you know, Jeff, we would be virtually energy independent, and that would bring the price of energy down. And when you bring the price of energy down, energy is the most inflationary component of the entire economy. There's an energy cost in everything that you use. So it would start to bring inflation down. And we got to do it with regulations, because regulations are a hidden inflationary cost. It's a hidden tax. And there's a lot of things that can be done to help. But this is an administration that has no interest in really bringing these prices down.
Well, best I can tell here, and they insist that these oil and gas companies are sitting on these leases and they're not exploring. When you go back to those guys, you ask what's going on with that. They say, well, we don't want to invest in a big, you know, a drill for oil and gas or whatever, because we don't know what this administration is going to do in, you know, 6 months. They may reverse course and take those leases away. And I think that's a concern, but we're getting kind of a weird back and forth from the players here. And my sense of this is that you give it to the Biden administration for being so wedded to this ideology that no matter what the consequences are, they're not changing course. They seem to be very, very, very much committed to this demand destruction policy. I think that they think is the right way.
Yeah, they issue a lease from one agency, and then they impose regulations and other blocking maneuvers in other agencies. Again, this is very disingenuous. They know exactly what they're doing. They said, well, we've issued all these permits, but then you've got another agency that's blocking them. And then when you add to that ESG requirements that they're imposing on these companies, and literally on not on these companies, but on investors who will then refuse to make loans to these companies. And people don't understand a lot about, you don't just go out and knock a hole in the ground and start pumping oil. They've got $10 or $12 million in stranded costs before they ever pump a drop of oil out of the ground. So it's enormously expensive to open up new wells. And when you have a situation where you have no idea whether or not you'll be able to get the funding that you need for this because of these new policies that the Biden administration is imposing on people, you're not going to get that investment in the infrastructure that we need to become energy independent. And when you add to that, and this is something nobody talks about, Jeff, is that you've got college students that would have gone into fields that will lead them to long-term careers in the fossil fuel industry. They're not going there because they're looking down the road and think 10 or 15 years I'll have my degree, but I might not have a place to work, at least not in the United States, because of all of this. There's something I wanted to talk about with you, and it's something that I think's kind of gotten under the radar in regard to the Supreme Court decisions. And everybody talks about the Dobbs decision. They talk about the EPA decision, but what I think we need to realize is that the courts, these decisions really undermine the power of the administrative state, and is going to force the decision-making and the lawmaking back to Congress and back to state legislatures. And that scares the left to death because they know that the policies they're pushing are not popular. The Biden administration's approval ratings are absolutely in the tank because people are against the policy. So the only way they can pursue these things is through administrative action, through the EPA or through the Securities and Exchange Commission and places like that. I think that this last term of the U.S. Supreme Court will go down in history as one of the most impactful sessions that the court's ever had, because it is the first major push to return back to representative government and taking away lawmaking from the administrative state.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. The whole bureaucracy, the so-called deep state, they know their way around Washington, D.C., and they know how to manipulate the levers of power there, whereas, you know, a new president or whatever. Well, and not, you know, but we saw this a lot during the Trump administration, right, where they sort of figured out ways around the president of the United States.
Yeah. This is one of the underappreciated things about the Trump administration was everybody focused on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was, you know, really important. But the first thing the administration did was start reviewing regulations and getting rid of the obsolete and the contradictory regulations. And I was involved in that. I chaired a subcommittee on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee working with these federal agencies. That's really what jump-started things, was rolling back some of these more egregious regulations that were imposed by the Obama administration. And that's going to be one of the things that we need to be doing when we get the majority back is regulatory reform.
Congressman, I got to leave it there. We're out of time, but thanks for making time for us this morning. Let's talk again soon.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff.
Thank you. Congressman Gary Palmer of the 6th Congressional District there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.